12.
A Wilderness of Mirrors. By the end of that summer, White began to suspect that there was a mole inside the investigation. When one of his agents was questioning a seedy local attorney who, according to an informant, was trying to strangle the government's probe, the attorney betrayed a shocking knowledge of the inner workings of the case. Finally, he admitted that he'd seen parts of the reports made by the Bureau and had an opportunity to see more of them. The Bureau's probe had long been plagued by leaks and sabotage. One agent complained that information contained in reports immediately gets into the possession of unauthorized and unscrupulous persons. A U.S. attorney also discovered that the reports furnished to him by the Bureau had vanished from his office. The breaches threatened the lives of agents and created insidious doubts, with officials questioning each other's loyalty. One federal prosecutor demanded that no copy of his report be handed to any representative of the state of Oklahoma. Perhaps most damagingly, two private eyes, including one from the Burns Agency, tried to expose the Bureau's main informant, Kelsey Morrison. These private eyes leaked to several local officials that Morrison was working with the Bureau, then went so far as to detain him on a trumped-up robbery charge. Agent Berger said that the conduct of one of these private detectives was reprehensible and was certainly hurting our investigation. Obstruction, he noted, appeared to be these private detectives' sole object, adding, "Someone must be paying them to do this." An agent reported that Morrison, after being released from jail, seemed frightened out of his wits. During one of their meetings, Morrison beseeched agents to get the son of bitches who did the killings before they got him. Agent Berger warned Morrison, "Look out for double-crossing and traps." At night, White sometimes met with his team in the countryside, the men huddling in the dark like fugitives. Agents in the past had sensed that they were being followed, and White gave his men advice in case their cover was blown. "Keep your balance. Avoid any rough stuff if possible." Making it clear that they should carry weapons, he added, "But if you have to fight to survive, do a good job." White found himself wandering through a wilderness of mirrors, his work more akin to espionage than to criminal investigation. There were moles and double agents and possibly triple agents. No one had aroused more suspicion than the private eye called Pike. A gentleman in Osage County had once approached Agent Berger and introduced himself as an intermediary, a go-between for Pike. Agents were aware that Pike had been hired by William Hale back in 1921 to solve the Osage murders, but had abandoned the case after failing to make any progress. The intermediary, however, said that Pike had actually withheld a crucial piece of information that he had discovered during his investigation. He knew the identity of the third man who'd been spotted with Brian and Anna around the time that she was killed. Agent Berger wrote that Pike apparently has known and talked with this third man. But the intermediary made it clear that Pike would share this information under one condition, that he be paid a king's ransom. "It is quite apparent there is some crooked work afoot," Agent Berger wrote in a report. Agents demanded through the intermediary that Pike come forward. But again, he didn't comply, evidently determined to extort money and obstruct justice. Agents launched a manhunt for Pike, whose last known address was in Kansas City.
"Pike will have to be located and apprehended," Agent Berger wrote. "He changed his Kansas City address soon after it became known that we were working on him. We feel sure he has been paid to skip."
Not long after, Pike was caught allegedly committing highway robbery in Tulsa. Out of angles to play, he gave up a name of a local gambler. Agents could confirm that the gambler had been at one of the speakeasies drinking with Brian and Anna on the night of May 21st, but further investigation proved that the gambler had gone home too early to be the third man. It seemed as if the agents had once more been duped. But they continued to work on Pike, to pressure him, and over time he began to reveal, little by little, a hidden dimension to the case. He disclosed that he'd never really been hired to solve the murder of Anna Brown. In fact, he'd been asked to conceal Brian's whereabouts on the night of the crime. Pike told agents that he was supposed to manufacture evidence and to generate false witnesses, to shape an alibi, as he put it. What's more, He claimed that his orders had come directly from William Hale. Pike explained that Hale took pains never to say explicitly that Brian had been involved in Anna's murder, but this was evident from what Hale was asking him to do. If Pike was telling the truth, it meant that Hale, a seeming paragon of law and order who had held himself up as Molly Burkhart's most staunch protector, had been lying all these years about Anna's murder. Pike could not answer what White wanted to know most. Was Hale merely protecting Brian, or was he part of a more intricate, nefarious design? Pike, though, told agents one more thing that was startling. When he met with Hale and Brian, Pike said, there was sometimes another person present, Ernest Burkhart. Pike added that Ernest was careful never to discuss this case or talk it over with him in the presence of Molly Burkhart.